Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a special Happy Holidays edition of the Double Play Podcast. In this episode, Ryan and I are going to cut in two discussions that we had, one about Carlos Correa leaving the San Francisco Giants for the New York Mets, and the other a special holiday top 25 ranking as we rank our top 25 players in the MLB. Both of these were uploaded as videos to our YouTube, which is at the link in our bio, but stick around to this full episode to hear them both in audio form.
Hello, everybody. Happy holidays and welcome back to Double Play. We had to have a special episode, kind of more of a video type form, to discuss the chaos that happened with Carlos Correa over this past week. Jack, I know you're very disappointed. It happened the day after. There's our luck again. We always get this. The day after we make a video about Correa going to the Giants and kind of our reaction and what that means. But then he fails a physical, or not really fails a physical, has issues with the physical, we'll say, and turns around and signs with the Mets. It's crazy. Jack, I know you're disappointed, so I'll let you talk about it. Give your thoughts real quick.
Well, yeah, that is absolutely our luck, because I was uploading that day. I uploaded a TikTok to our account of my reaction to the Giants signing Carlos Correa. I was so excited. I was reading out all these stats, and I'm excited because of these stats, because he's going to be a San Francisco Giant for 13 years. I'm talking about why it's worth the money, why fans shouldn't be so critical, and saying all these things because I'm so happy that the Giants signed Carlos Correa, like I was prepared to do when I thought the Giants signed Aaron Judge. And yet here we sit, and the Giants have neither of them. In fact, John Hyman was the one that, when I was still awake and you were asleep and I was trying to get you to wake up, I saw his tweet saying Carlos Correa signs a deal with the New York Mets, 12 years, $315 million. And I'm like, I just could not, like, I was just sitting there in disbelief, hoping that John Hyman was wrong again, like he was on Aaron Judge. But he's wrong when it's good for the Giants, and he's right when it's bad for the Giants. But let's get into this story about how this happened, because it's really just one of the weirder things that we've ever seen in baseball. I can't remember something like this happening. Sometimes players fail their physical, but not, there's tend to not be a big disagreement about it, and not a player of Correa's caliber who had just signed a $350 million deal. So the Giants found something wrong with Correa's physical. The doctors disagreed that it was a big deal, and it's come out now that they had a problem with Carlos Correa's 2014 ankle injury, which was something that happened before he got to the MLB, hasn't crept up on him during his time in the MLB. And so Correa's team, when the Giants wanted to renegotiate the contract because they thought there was an injury that the Correa department didn't disclose to them, Correa was upset. Scott Boras, his agent, was upset that they didn't think that the ankle injury the Giants were fussing about was a big deal. So they gave the Giants some time to look into it. But Scott Boras said eventually they gave him a little bit too much time. So he went out and started to offer Correa up to other teams in the league. And even though he was in Hawaii, Steve Cohen, super owner of the New York Mets, was ready and waiting. Do you want to kind of get into where it went after that?
Yeah, the first thing that happened I wanted to mention, because it's just a funny little story about it. Right when the news comes out that the press conference was canceled due to something with the physical, I texted you, any reason to worry about Correa? You said, absolutely not. And I said, yeah, I agree, but it'd be funny if something did happen. And then a couple hours later, something did happen. But then, yeah, like you said, Cohen seals the deal for the Mets and offers him less annually, less total contract than what he got before. So maybe that's because of the injury. Maybe that has something to do with it. It's probably a number that if the Giants were to be successful in renegotiating, that's probably what it would have ended up looking like. So for the Giants, it's just kind of a fail. Like, does 35 million less and 2 million less a year really matter all that much when you're trying to secure a franchise player for the next 13 years? I would say no. Giants obviously had some internal disagreements, and they disagree that they wanted to save some money on it. I don't know if they got cold feet or if it was actually concerns about the injury, but it was just kind of something that was chaotic, and that most people woke up to the news in the morning. I know I did. I started just like jumping around, dancing around my room, even though like the Mets getting better is probably worse for me as a Dodgers fan than the Giants getting better. But I thought it was just funny to see a division rival suffer. So that part was just chaotic, and the Mets now look very dangerous in the National League East. Chance to win that now, and the National League in general, and the MLB. They have it, one of the favorites for sure, probably one or two in terms of odds to win the World Series as of now.
They're up to two. The Astros are still number one, but the Mets are at two.
Yeah, so they're going to be up there. They're going to have a great season, and it's just going to be it's going to be crazy to watch. And Steve Cohen just throwing around more money, trying to buy his team a World Series, essentially.
Well, yeah, I mean, we got to talk about the payroll before we get into a discussion about what I think it means for both teams and Carlos Correa. Because Steve Cohen, as we mentioned, I think the reason that the Giants were trying to shave some money off or potentially even look at not wanting to make the deal with Correa if they thought it was a big injury goes back to what you said in our episode the other day, which is like, this is pretty much the entire Giants franchise will be riding on whether Correa can live up to the contract that he's getting. And with the Giants ownership group and Farhan Zaidi, this being, you know, a guy that they were really pushing their chips in for, because while they do have money, they don't have Steve Cohen kind of money. They don't want to give a 13-year, $350 million deal to someone they think is going to be injured for a good amount of it, or could potentially have a big enough injury that derails his career. So they were doing their due diligence, just took them a little bit too long. So he goes to the Mets. Steve Cohen clearly not recklessly spending money, but it doesn't matter as much to him as it would to the San Francisco Giants, because A, he has the money, and B, the Mets are in more of a win now mode than the Giants, so their success is less dependent on whether Correa can play for all 12 years, because they're looking to win a World Series in the next 3 years. While they still have Scherzer, they still have Verlander, and they still have all of this talent on their roster at one time. But when you have that much money and you're spending that much money, you're going to set some records. And they did in the process. Their payroll, including an $111 million luxury tax this year, will be just about $500 million and could creep even higher, because we've heard that they still want to make some more moves. And that sounds like a big number, and it is, because no payroll in the league ever has been more than $350 million. So they're just blowing past previous payroll records. Steve Cohen, it's kind of like just a little dust off his shoulder, $111 million for the luxury tax. I'm sure he won't miss it if the Mets win a World Series, but they're spending crazy money. The luxury tax that they're paying, $111 mil, is just $2 million more than the average payroll across all of Major League Baseball. You could probably lump the A's and the Pirates and the Reds, like all of the money that they're spending wouldn't even come close to the luxury tax that the Mets are paying on all their players. So, Steve Cohen bringing out the Brinks truck for Carlos Correa, Francisco Lindor, and they've got just about one of the best rosters in baseball now. So if they win a World Series, it's worth it. But what is your take, first of all, on, you know, just how much money Steve Cohen's spending?
I mean, it's ridiculous. And I feel like, as crazy as it sounds, it's almost something that the Mets needed to do this year. And because we saw Nimmo was a free agent, DeGrom was... It ended up leaving, but was thinking about leaving. And it kind of looked like he was going to leave. Diaz was a free agent. So, and they did all that. They re-signed Diaz. They re-signed Nimmo. They replaced DeGrom with Verlander. Doing all that, it almost looked like a net zero, if not a little bit of getting better. And that they replaced a few of their rotation pieces with other rotation pieces. So it almost looked like a net zero, and they were going to be a similar 101 win team that they were last year. And then they add Carlos Correa, which is absolutely ridiculous. I think they're definitely favorites to win the National League East right now, and they might win close to 110 games and be the best team in baseball in the regular season. And then it comes down to the postseason, which you had some struggles with last year, but now you're not just adding Correa to that team, which is something we talked about last episode with the Giants. You're getting Correa, who has a great track record in the postseason and can be a catalyst for a World Series run. So you're not just getting a player of Correa's caliber, but you're getting a player that can perform like that in the postseason. He's proven it. And the Mets look to be very scary going into the season and potential World Series run.
So, I mean, let's kind of just run it around from catcher to outfield. They've got Francisco Alvarez and Omar Narvaez, you would assume, playing catcher. You've got Pete Alonso at first base. You could play Jeff McNeil now mostly at second base. I've seen that they are going to move Carlos Correa to third, which his arm clearly makes it... He's able to play third from shortstop. And you've got Francisco Lindor at short. Those are the two Puerto Rican team left side of the infield, and now they're going to be playing probably for the rest of their careers in Queens. You have Starling Marte in right field, Brandon Nimmo in center field, and I've seen that they will play Brett Beatty sometimes in left. They still have Mark Canha. And then you look at the bench, and you've got Luis Guillorme, who's been good for them. You have Eduardo Escobar, who you signed to be a starting third baseman last year as a DH or a bench bat. You still have Daniel Vogelbach, Darren Ruff, who they traded for at the trade deadline. line last year. Like, that is one of the best lineups in all of baseball. The question marks could potentially come with the starting pitching, but then you got to remember they've got the two highest AAV contracts in the league and two of the all-time greats among starting pitchers, with Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander at the front of their rotation. They brought in Kodai Senga. They brought in Jose Quintana. They still have Carlos Carrasco. So that's five arms right there. So if it all works out for them, everyone stays healthy. Overall, do you think that this signing gives the Mets the best roster in baseball?
Their ceiling is definitely yes, and I think overall I would have to lean towards yes. That the other competition would be the Astros, who lost Verlander to the Mets. So I think the pitching staff at its ceiling gives them the best roster in baseball. Because if Quintana does what he did last year, Carrasco is just a good five starter. If Kodai Senga does what, like, if he translates into Major League Baseball and those two guys at the top just stay horses and stay what they've been doing their entire career, this isn't just one of the best rosters in baseball. That could be the best rotation in baseball and best lineup in baseball. So they could just be all around kind of a juggernaut that leads this team to a World Series at its ceiling. But the floor is the Mets going to Met, and we could see some disaster if Correa doesn't make a good move to a good switch to third base, if they get some injuries, if Verlander and Scherzer finally start to show age, if those guys at the back end of the rotation don't have the years they've been having. So the floor is an easy World Series title for this team, being the best, far and away best team in baseball, but the floor could be a disaster for Mets fans, for Steve Cohen, and now you're tying up all this money into a team that doesn't stick. So it's just going to be, it could be a very, it's a polarizing team for what their expectations can be this year, and it's something that's going to be interesting to see, but I think on paper, it's definitely one of the best rosters in baseball.
Well, I think Steve Cohen has heard about Mets going to Met. He knows that that's happened in past years, and so he just knows he can sign that checkbook to make it less likely to happen, because even if one of these players has a down year, like if you're on the Giants and you had Carlos Correa and he had a down year, they're not going anywhere. But if you're the Mets now and Francisco Lindor has a down year, or maybe Pete Alonso has a down year, or potentially Max Scherzer gets injured for a little bit, like, they can withstand that because of just how much star power they have. And if someone goes down, hey, now Eduardo Escobar moves back into the lineup. That's not a big deal for a lot of other teams. For the Mets, you know, it's not a star player going in, but it's still a very serviceable player that they've got those guys they can move off the bench into the starting lineup. They've got so much star power up and down the lineup that it's going to be hard to pitch to them if they're all healthy. But even if one of them goes down or one of them struggling, they still have just so many guys that can pick up the slack. I really think that I would agree with you that they probably do have the best roster on paper in baseball. Now, we know that doesn't always work out. You look at the White Sox, who we thought had a great roster this year, and they just kind of sucked. The Dodgers have had a great roster forever, and they haven't gotten it done in the postseason outside of 2020. But I think right now the Mets have put themselves in a really good position to continue to compete.
And now, what does this do for the Giants? They lose their franchise piece that they thought they were going to get for the next 13 years. Where do you go from here if you're the Giants team, who have some young pieces, but they're also, their young core is, or their core is aging out now? So where does the front office go from here? Are you still trying to sign big free agents, which kind of this was the year to do it, you're not going to see as much, or do you go into a full kind of tear it down and see what you can do?
They really set themselves pretty far behind with this chaos, because this was, you're right, the offseason where they knew the money was going to line up with the talent in the free agency class. They thought they had Aaron Judge. It didn't work out. But then signing Correa and having him for 7 days, which you thought that he was going to be your next franchise piece, you thought you had tied down $350 million in him. You missed out on the other free agents. Dansby Swanson signed during that time. Carlos Rodon left the Giants during that time for the New York Yankees. Kodai Senga, I believe, signed in that same period of time. Yeah, I think Kodai Senga signed in that same period of time. And a couple other stars signed while the Giants thought they had Carlos Correa. I guarantee you, if they had lost out to the Mets on Correa in the first place, one of those players would be in San Francisco right now, whether it be Rodon or Swanson. And now you're sitting here and your biggest acquisition is Mitch Haniger, who, don't get me wrong, went to my high school. I think he's a great right fielder. That's not what you came into this offseason for. You told the fan base that you were going to make a splash, you weren't going to be outbid, and that you were going to bring in some key talent after missing out in the past couple of years on Bryce Harper and Shohei Ohtani, Giancarlo Stanton. You needed one of those players. And now with all of this happening, Correa leaving for the Mets, you end the offseason where you did spend some money to bring in smaller pieces, But this was going to be the off season, and now they really have set themselves far behind as a franchise because you're pretty much losing a year. I mean, this is going to be about the same team that lost or that won only 81 games. You're not changing all that much. So unless the old core have another great year, you're probably not making the playoffs in 2022 or 2023. So then you're losing just another year of some of the aging talent that you have, and eventually then you're going to have to extend some guys like Logan Webb. You're going to have to bring up the prospects, see if they work out or not. And next offseason, the talent is just not the same. So this was the offseason that they needed to bring in a big horse. They thought they did twice, and they lost out. I think they really set themselves far behind on a team building perspective and also the fan base. I mean, I follow a lot of Giants fans. Of course, I'm one myself. They lost a lot of faith in that fan base. The fan base really just does not believe in this front office anymore because they've swung and missed on so many big talents. And last year, they just didn't win games. So the Giants were fine, not having some of those big players. One, they won 107 games, but you can't go 81-81, not improve the team all that much, and then also have chaos like this happen where you miss out on the big names.
Yeah, it's they have a decision to make here. And I think if I were running the front office, what I would do is I would let this year ride out and kind of see where what happens with this team, where you can find some talent. If some guys perform that you weren't expecting to, maybe you trade a few pieces, get a few prospects. But I think if you're not in the playoff hunt, I think it might be time to kind of not necessarily tear it down, but to get rid of a few pieces and kind of focus on more prospects and you kind of just eat the money you have invested in kind of current guys like a Mitch Haniger and just kind of have them perform for you for a little bit while you're rebuilding. And I think it might be time for the Giants, but maybe they get some performance out of the guys that they signed this year. Maybe they make a playoff push. Maybe they're buyers and make it into the postseason, and then that kind of shifts what you do from there. Maybe you sign a few free agents next year who they're not the caliber of players this year, but they're going to help improve your team, and maybe you get better and you still make the playoffs, whether it be as a wild card team for a few years right now before maybe you get a big splash come or a big prospect come up in a couple years. But I think right now, if things go the way we expect them to go, it might be time for a kind of restart rebuild for the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, they were rebuilding for a while after kind of that 2017-2018 run. They just happened to win 107 games mid-rebuild, and while that's not going to happen every year, I think it gave them, a glimpse of hope that, like, hey, we could possibly compete now. They just haven't supplemented that with enough talent. You let Kevin Gausman walk because you thought you could replace him with some smaller names, and they did to some extent, but Kevin Gausman still proved that he was going to be a star. They brought in Carlos Rodon and kind of revitalized him as well, helped them have, a full healthy season, have a great season, and now he's off in New York because the Giants thought they had Carlos Correa, and you can't miss out on this much talent and not win games at the same time. So they were safe in 2021, not in 2022, and certainly not going into this year, 2023. I think this front office, if they don't land someone or they don't win games, I mean, they've got to turn their pages to Shohei Ohtani and hope that they can potentially get him from Anaheim, or else I honestly wouldn't be surprised, although I think that Farhan Zaidi is a great president of baseball operations. I wouldn't be surprised if he loses his job, just because you can't have this many years where you miss out on all the big free agents. It doesn't matter that you're trying to spend money, because if you have it and you don't, and then you lose games, there's really just no excuse for that.
Yeah, it's something that it's going to be interesting to see in the coming year and years what they do, what the ownership does with Farhan Zaidi and kind of the rest of the front office and what the front office does with the team. It's clear that there's some question marks, and it's going to be an interesting season going forward for both the Giants and the Mets, who are on very opposite ends of the spectrum after Correa flips. It feels like almost a transfer portal commitment for Correa. He was committed, decommits, has seen a lot of that right now in football, but it's going to be an interesting season for both these teams, with two very different trajectories and paths that they're going to be on.
Happy holidays, everyone, and welcome to Double Play Baseball, a special holiday celebration episode. If you're watching this on YouTube, it probably came out Christmas Eve. So if you celebrate Christmas, you celebrate Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate, happy holidays from us to you, and we wanted to give you a little present, a little before Christmas and all the other holiday celebrations, our top 25 MLB player rankings. We developed these over the last week, and we're excited to share them to kind of finish out 2022, maybe start a look forward to 2023, and give you guys a little gift for the holidays. So, Ryan, we're going to go 25-1. How excited are you, and do you want to start us off?
I'm very excited. 25 players, December 25th is Christmas. I'm going to start with my two honorable mentions, so I'm going to give 26, 27, because we make the rules here. 27, I'm going Carlos Rodon. I think he's very close up there, one of the better pitchers, especially after last season, Cy Young. Number 26, a guy I wanted to have in my top 25. I had him at 25, but then I forgot about someone completely who I had to add. It's Julio Rodriguez. I think already after one season, he had 146 WRC plus and a rookie of the year. He's got an MVP coming his way. So those are my two honorable mentions. To kick us off with number 25, I get Jose Altuve, who's quietly had one of the best seasons in his career. His WRC plus and war was a little worse, but WRC plus was better than his MVP season in 2017. So he had a wonderful year, and it was kind of quiet, too. He had the best season for a second baseman. He's still one of the best players in the league. I got him at 25.
Yeah, I like that ranking. I want to give a couple honorable mentions, too. We can call these, I guess, the stocking stuffers. Just left off my list. I didn't rank them in any order, but I had to leave off Rafael Devers and Kyle Tucker, two players who I wanted to have on, two great lefty bats, but just couldn't move them above some of the other guys on the list. And I'll kind of start with a preface of how I went about ranking these players. I wanted to take into account the last three seasons, including 2020. I ranked it mostly on 2022, and so I did a little, like, I started with a little calculation of kind of ranking 60% based on 2022, 30% based off 2021, and then 10% for 2020, which, even though it was a 60-game season, I want to put some importance on that. So a player like Julio Rodriguez, who only has played in 2022, I thought it was maybe a little too early to rank him in my top 25, which I know that you didn't end up putting him in, but I wanted to rank off that. So a lot of this is based on mostly 2022, but then also taking into account the certain past seasons as well. Just overall, the best players right now, not who I think is going to be the best in 2023, but just overall who I think is the best right now. So I'll start it off with 25, who was your 27, Carlos Rodon. I'm not sure I can really forgive him for leaving San Francisco as of right now, but he's still top 25 in my eyes. A 2.8 ERA since 2020 with 11.2 WAR. I think that's fourth among pitchers, over 318 and a third innings pitched, 12 strikeouts per nine innings. For me, the volume wasn't high enough to move him all that much higher on this list, but with healthy seasons like he had in 2022, I expect him to keep rising. I think he is deserving of being number 25.
At 24, I have Austin Riley, who is a guy that could be so much higher with another great season this season, and he's got MVP potential. He's fun to watch. He's coming in at number 24.
I have Austin Riley at number 24. I thought it was maybe a controversial pick because I think that some people maybe don't value the defense he plays at third base. I still think, though, that he's earned a top 25 placement. Didn't have a great 2022, but he's had two MVP caliber seasons in 2021 and 2022, an 864 OPS since 2020, 10.3 WAR, and like I said, most of those came in the last two seasons. So I think Austin Riley can continue to move up. I think he might end up winning an MVP one of these seasons because he's been right in the conversation for the last 2 years.
Yeah, I think he was number five or six in this past year's voting. Coming to number 23, it's my first pitcher on the board. I've got Corbin Burns, who, even after a down year to his standards, is still coming off a Cy Young in 2021. He gets number 23 on my list, and he's got potential to win another Cy Young.
I'll say, I think you severely underrated Corbin Burns, so I'll get to him later. I've got Justin Verlander at 23. He barely pitched since 2020, obviously only really pitched in 2022. He had one start in that COVID year in 2020, but his 2022 season was incredibly dominant, and really that season alone earns him a spot on my list. Couldn't put him any higher because if you only pitch one season out of the last three, I can't put you above a guy like Corbin Burns who's pitched all three, but a 6.1 WAR and a 1.75 ERA across 175 innings pitched in 2022. It earns him a spot on my list.
You're going to be surprised as where I have Justin Verlander then. Coming at my number 22, I've got Xander Bogaerts, who just signed with the Padres. He's consistently one of the best hitters in baseball. He's always around a 120 to 130 WRC+. Defense kind of holds him back from being higher. He's gotten up to a 140 WRC+. So he's one of the better hitters, maybe the best hitting shortstop in baseball. He slots in at number 22 for me, and he could be much higher with some good seasons for the Padres.
22, I've got Garrett Cole. And Cole gets a lot of hate. Some of it's kind of funny, but overall, I don't think it should distract fans from his consistent performance and in really high quality volume. 455 innings pitched since 2020 with a 3.28 ERA, strikes out just about 12 batters per nine innings. So when it came to Verlander and Cole, while maybe Verlander has had the best season out of those two, when you're comparing 181 innings pitched to 455 over the last three seasons, I had to lean Garrett Cole. Expected stats kind of lean in his favor, but he also just continuously proves kind of start to start that he can be one of the best arms in baseball, and he's out there every single day. Overall, innings pitched, I know it's not the sexiest stat, but it means you're getting outs for your team, and I think Cole earns a spot in the top 25, even with maybe a down year and not showing his dominance quite like he did back in 2018, 2019.
Yeah, that was one I suspected that we would defer on. I did not get Garrett Cole in my top 25. He would be in the top 30 if we do that. I think he's probably slots in and probably 28 to 29 for me. But coming in at number 21, I had a tough time ranking these next two guys. I ended up going Jose Ramirez at number 21. He's still one of the more underrated players in baseball. He was an MVP candidate for a lot of last year before he kind of fizzled out. But Jose Ramirez, great switch hitting bat, signed an extension recently. Number 21 for the Guardians.
He's one of the most underrated players of baseball because you're putting him at 21. That's all I'll say. I've got Jose Altuve at 21. He really just won't slow down, and he had an underratedly insane season in 2022. He's got an 842 OPS since 2020, despite really a bad COVID season in that 2020 year. And last season, a 164 WRC plus, 6.6 WAR with 18 stolen bases at second base. Continued to prove that he's the best second baseman in the league. I put him at 21.
Number 20 for me was the guy who had trouble ranking with him and Jose Ramirez. I had Rafael Devers, who you had as your honorable mention. He comes in at number 20 for me. Like I said, it's so hard to rank him, but he's one of the better left-handed bats in baseball, and he's slots at number 20. He should get paid pretty soon.
I've got Carlos Correa at number 20. It was really tough to me to decide the two longtime teammates, Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa, who should be higher, but I leaned Correa. They've got really similar performance, but it's the defense and the postseason dominance that made me put Correa over Jose Altuve. I'm on bad terms with him right now, but I'll look past it. In the past 3 years, split between Houston and Minnesota, 130 WRC plus, 822 OPS, won a platinum glove, is continually an elite defender at shortstop. I think he's right there at the start of the top 20.
Coming in at 19 for me, I got Trey Turner, who's a great hitter, elite speed, which kind of makes up for his lack of defense, gets him here at 19, and he's consistently one of the best hitters and for average and speed in baseball, and what he makes up for sometimes for a lack of power, which he still shows power. He's able to stretch singles into doubles and stretch ground outs into singles, so that's kind of something that you can't really teach and something that puts him in the top 20.
19 for me was one of the toughest players to rank. That's Ronald Acuna Jr. He's so good, like insanely good, that it feels weird to rank him here and not higher up on this list. But he's only got a 136 WRC plus since 2020, weighed down by a 114 last season after being over 157 the last 2 years. A healthy Acuna's in the top 10, but he just really doesn't have as many games played as some of these other guys. And when you average out his last three seasons, a 136 WRC plus is not as high as some of those other guys that are up higher than him on my list. I really do think if he can battle through these injuries, he'll move up and into the top 10 pretty easily with a good 2023 season. But with the injuries that he's faced in the past, and honestly a pretty disappointing 2022 despite being above average, I got to put Acuna at 19.
I've got Acuna at 18. Like you said, talent wise he's top 10, and I just need to see it in action for a full season. We saw it kind of in 2021 before he got hurt. He was the leading MVP candidate for quite some time, but I'm excited for his 2023 and what he can do, and he can vault his way into the top 10.
Number 18, right above Ronald Acuna, is going to be Nolan Arenado for me. He's such a stud. I think that people that said he couldn't hit outside of Coors Field have been silenced. A 12.4 WAR since 2020 with an 832 OPS. His best season was this past year, but only a 124 WRC plus over the past three seasons, even compared to Acuna, who I said was lower compared to other players. Acuna was at 136 since 2020. Nolan Arenado, 124 since 2020. But he's played more games. He's a better defender, I think, than Acuna is. Overall, the expected stats don't love Nolan Arenado, but he's had a great season. I just couldn't put him any higher just off his 2022 season because he was hitting a little bit down in 2020, 2021. And there's just some great players above him.
That's one where we definitely differ there. I've got him much higher. But coming at 17 was a guy I had trouble ranking with Trey Turner. It's Carlos Correa, who you kind of already talked about. Clutch hitter, amazing gloves, and that's all the nice things I'm going to say about him.
Yeah, I've got Trey Turner at number 17. I think that Trey Turner deserves to be above Carlos Correa at this point in his career, and I was expecting to rank Correa higher than Turner because I'm a little shocked to see him here this high at 20, at 17. But he's super consistent in all areas, an 878 OPS since 2020, 71 stolen bases, gives him 15.9 WAR combined over the last three seasons, which is second in the league in that span. So I could argue that I should have put him a little bit higher, but I was surprised to see him get this high. I think he deserves to be over Correa. I've got him at 17.
Coming in at my number 16 was the top shortstop for me. Even after not playing in 2022, it's Fernando Tatis, who I think he's good enough talent-wise to crack the top 15, but obviously you've got the off-the-field issues, the injuries, not playing this year. Kind of keep him out at 16, but he's top 10, maybe even better when he's on the field.
At 16, the guy that I thought you kind of disrespected, I've got Corbin Burns, the leader in pitching WAR since 2020. Despite what I would say a down year in 2022, Burns still an absolute stud. 2.62 ERA over 428 innings pitched over the last 3 years. 2.4 FIP, striking out 12 batters per 9 innings. He had that amazing 2021 season, which even though it wasn't this past season, I still need to give him credit for. So Corbin Burns, while he wasn't as great in 2022 as 2021, has still been fantastic since that COVID year.
Starting off my top 15, a guy that's kind of tough to rank, he was my MVP pick for last year, it's Vladdy, who had one of the better seasons, which would win him MVP in 2021 and most other seasons if it weren't for Shohei Ohtani. And so Vladdy, even after a down year, he was still very good, down year compared to 2021. We'll see how he does in 2023, if he's going to be closer to 2021 or 22 as a player, but he comes in starting off my top 15.
I'm glad to see we were in the same range for Fernando. I've got him at 15, so only one spot ahead of where you had Tatis. By far the hardest player to rank, injuries, steroid scandals, overall just lack of games played. But when he's on the field, he's a top five player very easily. 963 OPS and 155 WRC plus since 2020, but he's only played in 189 games. So he's really only played one full season across the last 2.5 years, considering the COVID year. It's just not enough games played. And with the scandal, with everything like that, with some of his off the field issues, you have to wonder, maybe he takes a step back this year. But when he's on the field, he hits so many home runs. He's one of the most electric players in the league. He'd be top five easy if he had continued to play.
Coming in at 14, I've got maybe the best hitter in baseball, Yordan Alvarez, and that one was a very tough one to rank for me, just because I mean, he's a DH. You kind of the lack, I guess he played a lot of left field, and he's going to play a lot of left field. Actually, maybe not after they get Michael Brantley back, but with the Michael Brantley injury, he played a lot of left field, and he's just a subpar defender, which kind of leaves him here at 14, but he's one of the best hitters in baseball. And I mean, he was an MVP candidate despite being a DH. It's been a long time since that happened. Yordan Alvarez, 14.
At 14, I've got Vladimir Guerrero Jr., so we were pretty similarly ranked on Vladdy and Fernando. Like Tatis, also hard to rank because he had that amazing 2021, but a more down year in 2022. Still a 143 WRC plus and an 891 OPS since 2022. The availability is what I think puts him above Tatis. I would say Tatis is a more talented player, and maybe I'd expect him to have a better year this year if both of them play the same amount of games. But Vladdy, with the consistency, with the games played, I think earns him a spot at 14, right above Tatis and a couple of spots ahead of Acuna for me.
The next guy I've got, I could honestly put a little higher, but I'm going to go at 13. I've got Max Scherzer, who's got a 2.29 ERA last year, which I was surprised to learn. I did not realize he gave up that few runs last year. I slot him in at 13. He's one of the better pitchers in baseball. He's lived up to that contract so far with the Mets, and we'll see what he does this year as he's kind of getting older. But Max Scherzer, he's been great the last few years in his whole career. Number 13 for me.
Yeah, Max Scherzer not in my top 25. I was kind of surprised you have him this far ahead of Corbin Burns, who I'd argue has been better over the last 3 years. I mean, statistically has been better over the past couple years. At 13, I've got Sandy Alcantara. I won't reveal where I have him ranked in pitchers, but leads the league in innings pitched since 2020, a 2.74 ERA over that stretch, that dominant 2022 Cy Young season. He gets outs, which is so important, leading the league in innings, high volume, but also being such a quality pitcher with a 2.74 ERA.
I didn't have Sandy in my top 25. So coming at 12, another pitcher that I've got is Justin Verlander, who you mentioned earlier. I mean, he's got a Cy Young in his last two full seasons. Like, there's some kind of guys that you can knock off for being hurt, but when Verlander has a Cy Young, gets hurt, and then comes back and has another Cy Young, I feel like that's good enough to be top 12, number 12 in baseball.
Well, I don't really understand. Like, I mean, Sandy Alcantara has a Cy Young this year and hasn't missed years in past years, or hasn't missed any seasons in the past couple of years.
Well, I mean, it's one season. Same reason you left other guys low.
I guess, but his 2021 was pretty fantastic as well. So, I mean, it's your list, but I've got Yordan Alvarez coming in at number 12. If he wasn't so bad on defense, I'd rock him up this list. One of my favorite players in the league. Maybe the best pure hitter in baseball. A 160 WRC plus and a 944 OPS since 2020. He's the highest ranked Astro on my list, and he's so good.
Coming in at number 11 for me, just missed out in the top 10. This one's a hard one to rank for me. It's Paul Goldschmidt, who just coming off an MVP season. He gets number 11 for me.
Number 11, you're going to be mad at me, but I've got Mookie Betts. Just misses out on the top 10 despite another pretty solid year last year. But since 2020, an 876 OPS, a 13.2 WAR. It was really tough picking for me between him at number 11 and who I have at number 10. But I have Mookie Betts just missing out on the top 10.
Yeah, you're going to be surprised where I got Mookie then.
I'm biased. I'm not going to be surprised.
So coming in at number 10, starting off the top 10, I've got Freddie Freeman, who him and Goldschmidt were tough to rank, but Freddie Freeman's just Mr. Consistent. Starts the top 10 after a fourth place in MVP voting. Won the MVP in the shortened 2020 season and a great 2021 as well. He gets number 10.
Number 10, just above Mookie Betts, where these players were so close, it's Manny Machado for me. I asked you yesterday where you would rank those two compared to each other, and I know you would take Mookie above Manny, but let me enlighten you a little bit. I really think Manny's really lived up to his contract in the past seasons, and he earns that top 10 spot. Both him and Mookie over the last 3 years have a 139 WRC+, but compared to Mookie, Manny a 14.3 WAR, which is higher than Mookie's 13.2. I think slightly better defense, and then also leadership postseason hitting potentially put Manny Machado above Mookie Betts. I think that what he's done in a lineup that hasn't had Fernando Tatis in the past couple years is really admirable, and I think that statistically he's just better than Mookie Betts, plays a better defense than him as well. So I don't know if you stuck with having Mookie above Manny, but I think it's fair to put Manny Machado above Mookie Betts on this top 25 list.
Yeah, you're starting to make me a little scared as if I forgot someone in my top 10, because you've named off three players previously that are in my top 10. Coming in at number 9 is one of those players. I got Nolan Arenado, who was third in MVP voting last year. He's the second best third baseman for me in the league, and I mean, He's just been great his entire career. Number 9, Nolan Arenado.
Yeah, statistically, I mean, I think Nolan Arenado, based off last season, you could put up there, but I think people tend to look past how he struggled in 2021 and 2020, where he was not as great of a hitter as he was in 2022, and he really turned it on. But even then, we both agreed that Manny Machado was better than Nolan Arenado. That's why I have him ranked so high above. I think even Mookie Betts had a better, not a better 2022, but a better last couple seasons than Nolan Arenado. We'll get to who I have higher. But number 9 for me is Jacob DeGrom. I think he could be way higher on this list with a cleaner bill of health. Easily the best pitcher in baseball. But when you're only throwing 224 innings pitched since the 2020 season, compared to guys like Gerrit Cole and guys like Sandy Alcantara who have thrown over 450 innings, it's hard to put you much higher, even though he's been so dominant with a 2.05 ERA and a 1.8 FIP since 2020, averaging 14 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's so good, just wish he could stay healthy and he'd be way higher on this list.
Yeah, I've got Jacob DeGrom slotting in my 8 for the exact same reasons. He could be top 5 when he's on the field, and he's far above any other pitcher when he's healthy. Number 8, Jacob DeGrom.
I've got Paul Goldschmidt to date, and I'm kind of confused why you put Nolan Arenado above Paul Goldschmidt, because I think Goldschmidt had a better 2022 season, and he's also been better combined the last 3 years. I mean, a 982 OPS, 35 homers, 7.1 WAR last year in 2022, and overall, he's just been a better player over the last 3 seasons. I know he plays a less premium position, but he still had more WAR than Nolan Arenado over the past 3 years, and he's been a more consistent hitter, so I've got Paul Goldschmidt to date.
Slotting at number 7, I've got Manny Machado, who was just second in MVP voting. He's the best third baseman in baseball right now. Manny Machado coming into potentially a contract year, he's number 7.
7 for me is going to be Freddie Freeman. It was really hard to rank Goldie and Freddie Freeman, but I still think despite Goldie's MVP season this past year, Freeman's still the best first baseman in the league. He hasn't had a WRC plus under 130 since 2012, 15.1 WAR since 2020, just edges out Paul Goldschmidt. I've got Freddie Freeman at 7, although those two are really interchangeable for me. If you wanted to be more partial and look toward the 2020 season to rank Goldschmidt above Freeman, I wouldn't blame you, but Freddie Freeman had an MVP caliber season in 2022 as well, just didn't play quite as well as Goldschmidt. I think he's been more consistent over the past couple years.
Slotting him at my number six, a guy who is could be the best baseball player in baseball in the next couple of years, Juan Soto. He had a little bit of a down year. Still a great WRC plus. I didn't write down exactly what it was, and he still gets on base above a 400 on base percentage. So Juan Soto, defense kind of hurts him a little bit. He's a serviceable outfielder at best, so he's number six.
This my number six is the only guy who I'm kind of thinking you might have forgotten. I've got Bryce Harper at number six. Could be even higher again, like Jacob DeGrom with a cleaner bill of health. But he's been so good the past three seasons. A 971 OPS since 2020. Had that great MVP season in 2021. 6.6 WAR, 1044 OPS. He's going to deal with some injuries this year. He's dealt with some injuries in the past year. I've got him at number six, but I wouldn't blame you moving him a little higher. It's just the health for me.
Coming at number five was Mookie Betts for me. He's the true five-tool player. He does everything amazing. And even last year, I think he was fourth or fifth in MVP voting this past year. And the defense was amazing. He's a gold glover. WRC plus is always good. The WAR is good. He does everything great. Not sure what there's why you ranked him so low.
I don't understand how you have Mookie Betts over Juan Soto.
Yeah, he's a better player. Soto is just gets on base. That's the only thing he does convincingly better than Mookie Betts. Well,
I'll enlighten you in a couple of spots. At number five, the player who I really don't understand how you have him so low. I have Jose Ramirez at number five. Probably the most consistent star player in all of baseball. He had a 3.2 WAR in 2020 in 60 games, 3.2, 6.5 in 2021, 6.2 in 2022. He's got an 899 OPS and a 143 WRC plus since 2020. He's the best third baseman in baseball. He's got 57 stolen bases over that same span, and he's hitting in lineups that aren't as good as the lineups that Nolan Arenado, Manny Machado are hitting in. I think Jose Ramirez, you severely underrated him. He's the best third baseman in baseball, in my opinion.
I think you're overrating him. You always talk like this past year I felt like he kind of got his flowers a little bit, but you were still talking about how he's severely underrated. I see now why you think you a little overrate him.
Well, I'm curious, how is Nolan Arenado better than Jose Ramirez?
They're comparable hitting wise, other than
not over the past three seasons. I mean, Nolan Arenado had Jose Ramirez has not struggled in a single season. Could have won the MVP in 2020. He's had MVP caliber seasons in 2021 and 2022, where Nolan had that MVP like year this year, but had kind of struggled in 2021 and 2020.
Nolan Arenado is also far and away the better defender. Like, Jose Ramirez doesn't hold a cup of water to Arenado.
Yes, but still, I mean, wins above replacement wise, I would still argue that Jose Ramirez has a high edge in that. I averaged out, so when I told you that I did like the measurements, measuring out 60% based off 2022, 30% based off 2021, and then 10% based off 2020, just to get an actual gauge of what wins above replacement thinks, multiplied those out so to give people a numerical ranking. Jose Ramirez at 5.99. I'm going to scroll down to Nolan Arenado, who had 5.68. So, I mean, even then, I think that hitting-wise, statistically-wise, consistency-wise as well, I've got Jose Ramirez at way above Nolan Arenado.
Coming in at number four, I've got Bryce Harper, who you thought I forgot about. He won the MVP in 2021 and was great until he got hurt, and then was great when he came back this past year. I think he's going to miss the majority of 2023, but he's one of the best when he's on the field.
I've got Juan Soto at number four. I know you think that he's not all that great, but even though people think he struggled last year, his 2020 seasons and 2021 season were both phenomenal. The best on-base percentage in the league since 2020 by a very large margin, 440. He's got a 959 OPS over the last three seasons. He's better than Bryce Harper. He's better than Mookie Betts, and he's at number four. He's going to bounce back this season in a big way, and I think he's going to prove you wrong.
I think now in the top three, I think we're going to have the same order for these guys. Coming in at number three for me is Aaron Judge, coming off one of the best seasons of all time. He could be number two for me, but I'm going to slot him in at number three.
Yeah, there was a part of me that wanted to rank Judge at number two, but I have to put him at number three. Leads the league in WAR since 2020, 18 wins above replacement with a 10 .1006 OPS and 110 homers over the last three seasons. Really one of the best seasons we've ever seen in 2022, but there's just two guys above him that it's hard to rank him above.
Yeah, so now we get into the top two, which is funny because assuming we have the same, they're both teammates on one of the not better teams in baseball. I've got Mike Trout at number two. He just loses the best player in baseball title because of his inconsistent health-wise. I think that's a place where you can hurt him a little bit just because of what the number one guy has done, something we've never seen before. But Mike Trout, he's still one of the best. And he played, I think it was around 100 games last year.
It was 116.
And put up like a 6 WAR. So if he played a full season, that's rivaling Judge's season. It wouldn't have been quite as good as Judge last season, but it still would have been an MVP season in almost any other year, and it would have rivaled one of the greatest seasons of all time from Aaron Judge. So Mike Trout is still a top two player in baseball when he's on the field. It's just the health hurts him a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I've got Trout at number two. I'm glad that the person at number one has passed Mike Trout, but it just sucks the circumstances with Trout missing so much time, but a 174 WRC plus since 2020, OPS at 1013. He's so good. Even this last year, he turned into just a home run hitting machine. I think he hit over 40 home runs despite missing all those games. Mike Trout is so good, but I have to put him at number two.
And number one, we're both going to have him here. It's Shohei Ohtani. I think he should be number one. And anyone who's ever watched baseball, if they're ranking, Shohei should be number one. He pitches and hits at an elite level. I mean, there's not much to say. No one else in baseball history has ever done what he's doing. He's number one.
Yeah, I think an 886 OPS since 2020 would have earned a hitter a spot on my list. A 2.9 ERA would have earned a pitcher a spot on my list. And Shohei Ohtani is both at the same time. He's number one. He's top 25, and he's right there at number one because he's been so great. 17.4 combined WAR over the past three seasons, and that was even with the 2020 season that's not even close to the seasons he's had in 2021, in 2022. He's been the best player in the league for the last 2 years.
So happy holidays, everyone. That is our top 25 player rankings. Make sure you let us know if you're on the podcast. Go to our socials. Let us know what you thought about these rankings. And if you're on YouTube, leave a comment down below. Who are we too high on? Who are we too low on the ones we disagreed on? Who was right? Who had the better list? Let us know down below. This was fun doing. I've always kind of, like, when people ask me who's the best player, or who's a top five, is this person a top five player? I'm glad I now have my list so I can refer to it when people ask me these questions. So I'm glad we're able to do this. Happy holidays. That was our top 25. Jack, what do you got to say?
I think you should use my list if someone asks you, because I don't know. There's some players that I've got some gripes about on your list. So I'm sure we'll talk about that off camera. But yeah, let us know down below who you think is better. If you're listening on Spotify, you can't see our Christmas sweaters, the Santa hat that Ryan's wearing. But we hope that you guys have a happy holidays. And overall, enjoy Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you guys celebrate with your family, with whoever you celebrate it with. We hope you guys have a good time. We'll be back after the holiday season to kind of start getting into some outlook for next year, because most of the free agency news is done. Most of the trades are probably done for the offseason. And we got to start looking ahead to a 2023 season as we're under 100 days away from opening day. But open up those presents, enjoy the great holiday food. And thank you guys for listening and spending your Christmas Eve or this holiday day to listen to Double Play Baseball. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.